WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons today, we have Robert Metcalf. Bob, thanks for so much for joining us. I've got to tell you, I got this email from Robert Metcalf saying, I wrote a position paper on homeowner associations. I'm actually a board member, and when I looked at what was going on, I decided, this is not so good. So I did a little more investigating, and here's what I've got. So I've been very busy, and I sent the thing to my husband, and I said, you know, read it, check it out, you know, put it on the website. Upload it on my website if you think it's good. So he did. Obviously, he thought it was good. Then I started getting copies of your position paper from everyone. Sure, you got to see this. Sure, you've got to see that. So I called Bob and I said, okay, you know, you want to come on the show. I was very honest and very upfront, and I said, I hadn't read it yet, but based on everybody else's comments, and based on the fact that everybody was sending it to me, let's talk about it. I started reading it, and I had to put it down, and I finished it yesterday, and I was very, very impressed. For those of you listening, you can find it. You can read it for yourselves. It's on my website, onthecommons.us, and it's in Viewpoints, and it's the top article there. So go ahead and read it, but, you know, today you're going to hear about it. So get comfortable, because Bob's got a lot to say. And, Bob, what I like about what you did was the fact that you didn't comment. You're not mad. You're not a victim. You're actually a board member. And it's when you became a board member that you decided, hey, there's a problem here, right?
Hello, Sue.
Yeah.
You dropped out a little bit. I still lost a little bit of your signal there.
Oh, dear.
If you can give me just a little... Oh. Yeah, it's a little bit tough. But if you like, I'll just tell you how this all transpired. I'm a layperson. I'm certainly not an academic or a specialist in any of this. I'm probably got involved with this with the way the majority of people do. I went looking for a house. I found one and I purchased it. And it was described to me as you know, being a situation where a lot of my maintenance needs would be taken care of. And as I'm approaching retirement, that sounded attractive, and you know, I bought the property. Well, a couple of years ago, I went to put a patio in front of my place, and I went through the architectural process, you know, the review form and everything, and it was approved. And that was originally supposed to happen in the fall, and because of financial considerations, an expensive project, my wife and I decided we were going to put it off until the springtime, so we did that. So the following May, we started having the work done. Well, I get a phone call at work from my contractor, who has this person, as he described it, in his face at my property, telling him that he's got to pack up and leave. And I'm thinking to myself, what could possibly be going on here? So I call the management company, and here I find that because the architectural request change is only valid for 90 days, which in and of itself seems a little bit strange, but nonetheless, you know, I had to go through this entire process all over again. And the thing that bothered me was not even so much that. It was the arrogance of the management company representative that really started me to thinking. I mean, who was this person? You know, she's not paying my mortgage. You know, I mean, she works for me. And I was very, very upset about it. So the following year, the board elections became, you know, they were going to have the board elections. And, of course, nobody was running because nobody's really interested. So I volunteered that I would be on the board. So when I got on the board, just like in the paper says, I started to look into this initially to find out what was going on. And as I started to do my own bit of research, what I discovered was just like the paper says. It's simply an appalling situation. that the people find themselves in unwittingly, because I can tell you that virtually nobody that lives in my community is aware of just how onerous and ubiquitous the restrictions are. And I decided to write that paper about it and get involved in it, and that's basically the history of it.
It sounds, Bob, like you did a fair amount of research. It's not, the paper is not, this is a bad thing because they came after me. The paper actually, you took the time to do the research. You went through, you've got opposing viewpoints there. You've got, opinions that support your position as well. And you came to some conclusions.
Well, yeah, I mean, the conclusions that I come to is that, number one, this problem, first off, it touches so many people in the country. I mean, you know, it's like 20% of the population, so it's a real thing. The second thing is that there's so many layers of government, private institutions, businesses, you know, involved in this, it's a virtual hydra, if you will, of problems. And for me personally, as just a resident who lives in an HOA, the real issue for me is how it destroys the fabric of the neighborhood. In other words, from my point of view, that in the end is the most tragic part of this for the majority of people. You know, the foreclosures and the fines and the huge attorney fees and all. I mean, yeah, on an individual basis, those are legal issues that have to be addressed and corrected. And like I said, people ask me, they say, how could you possibly do that, being, you know, it's so complicated and convoluted? And my answer to that is simple. That is, it's an injustice that has to be cured. You know, you have a government that's capable of producing an 18,000-page income tax code, so they can do detail. And there are people that can work this thing out, but the injustice has to be corrected. But the main thing is, for the majority of the people that live in this quiet desperation, if you will, you know, their relationships with their neighbors are affected by this and affected badly. And Shu, it was like you who said the other night to me, and it's really true, is it's become not how are you doing, but what are you doing? And that really says it all. I mean, that is a terrible, terrible thing.
That was from Professor Paula Franzese, who said that at the conference in New Jersey last month, or in May. And she said, we've gone from a society of asking our neighbors, how are you doing, neighbor, to what are you doing, neighbor? And you're right. It does say it all. It absolutely does say it all.
Yeah. I mean, I just, I know that the people that, in my situation, I have an ally on the board. Our board has 5 members, and I happen to be the treasurer, and there's one other member who is aligned with me. The other 3 members, which is the majority, are CAI right down the line, everything. And so they, you know, I know these people, and I know that if we were just in a normal situation, you know, a regular neighborhood, I would like these people. I would, you know, and they would like me, and we would get along. Unfortunately, this thing creates this horrendous, you know, this terrible situation of bickering back and forth and just, you know, just at each other about all this stuff. I mean, it's truly, truly a shame. I don't know how else to say it.
You know, Bob, there's so many misconceptions and so much misinformation about what a homeowners association is and isn't. One of them, you know, one of the things that the industry or CAI or, you know, whoever, the proponents of associations, let's say, will come up with anytime anyone says anything that's negative about an association, automatically it's, why don't you run for the board? If you knew what it was like to be on the board, then you wouldn't be complaining. You would realize that it's such a thankless, volunteer job that you would get down on your hands and knees and kiss everyone and say, thank you for doing this. That's misconception number one, because like you, I also got on the board. And like you, it was then that I realized just what a mess this whole concept is. I mean, you know, it's when you start seeing it from the inside, you can't cover it up. It's not a pretty picture. The other misconception, misinterpretation, whatever you have, is on the part of the homeowners. They believe that because you are a board member, because you've been a board member, then you're on the other side. You're one of the bad guys. And that's clearly not true. And I think going back to what you said at the beginning, which is that it's the concept, it's the whole scheme, residential scheme, the whole setup that actually pits neighbor against neighbor. You can't foster a sense of community in an association. It just cannot be done.
Well, I guess the thing of it is that anytime you take people who are supposed to be peers, and this is really the main thrust of the paper, is anytime that you take people that are supposed to be equals, peers, and you all of a sudden set up this artificial structure that allows, you know, a particular person to literally lord over the other. And the association powers are simply beyond belief. I mean, until you really get into it and see the kind of power and the kind of effect that they can have on people's lives, it's hard to believe. So what you wind up with is you wind up with this sort of this Orwellian Animal Farm sort of logic that, you know, everybody's equal, but some people are more equal than others, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, for instance, in my association right now, the president, who is, you know, very, very pro-CAI, he has a violation on his house as I'm talking to you. Yet that never comes up. That never comes up. So the point is it you know, all people are equals, just some people are more equal than others.
Well, it's arbitrary.
It's just not right.
It's arbitrary, and no, I know. I mean, that's one of the things that keeps coming up. In your paper, Bob, you seem to think that if people knew what they were getting into, they wouldn't buy into it.
That's right. I think that disclosure, like I said, you know, you pick up a pack of cigarettes or watch an advertisement on TV for a pharmaceutical or a whole host of other things. Okay, there's laws about disclosure. I mean, the simple fact that people aren't forced to sign off on this, have it notarized as a separate item, because the reason I stress that is because when something's notarized, it's set apart. It has its own identity. It's not just part of the package. It has an identity. That's important, because the people that buy the properties, if they all of a sudden are in a position of having to read this document telling them, you know, all the things that they're going to be restricted from doing, and it's going to be notarized, that might give them some thought as to, geez, you know, this must be something very, very serious, which it is, okay? The fact that simply recording the restrictions with the deed by the developer, the fact that the courts look at that as being fair notice is simply unconscionable. I mean, it's just simply unconscionable. It's as unconscionable as if, take cigarettes, for instance, the warnings on the pack of a cigarette, if the tobacco companies had filed them with some federal agency in Washington, that would be considered fair notice. I mean, it's ridiculous on its face. So, you know, the law and the way the law has been practiced and the way the courts have passed down their decisions through time has a lot to do with this current situation, in my view.
Well, I sort of would have agreed with you about 15 years ago. But I've seen personally that the disclosure actually has worked against the homeowners over time, because when I first got involved, my idea was, gee whiz, if people understood what they were getting into, they just simply and sweetly wouldn't buy in here. But as you pointed out, you were buying a house.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places, a lot of parts of the country, you know, you don't have an option. Everything is in a homeowners association.
That's right.
So I've had so many people call me up and say, you know, I told the realtor I did not want a homeowners association, but there was nothing available that wasn't.
That's right.
So you're basically stuck with it. And before we had disclosure in Virginia, when you went to court and you relied on constructive notice, which was just the fact that the covenants were recorded in the land records, the judge was a little more lenient towards the homeowner, so the homeowner tended to win a few more of the cases. What has happened since then is that you're given a package. You're given a disclosure package in Virginia and in many other states, and you're told, look, you've got 72 hours to read this, and if there's anything in here you do not like, you can back out of the contract.
Yeah.
Without losing your earnest money deposit. Now, the problem with that is that it's volumes thick. People don't read it. They don't understand it. They don't have time to read it. They're dealing with other paperwork. They've got their lives to get on with. 72 hours come and go.
Sure.
And they go to settlement and they sign on. Or if, you know, and if they're lucky, they get it ahead of time. But quite often they don't. It just goes to settlement, sign here. You got the documents. Yes, I did. We're off and running.
Well,
now what happens when you go to court? The whole scenario has changed because now you have been given notice. You have been given an option of backing out. You chose not to do that. You chose not to avail yourself of that right. So therefore, the courts have been coming down a whole lot tougher on the homeowner than they did before we had these disclosure packages.
Well, let me tell you, this just happened in my own neighborhood. The reason I know this is because I'm on the board. If that would all be true, maybe, I'm not so sure I even really agree with that, because there's not enough emphasis put on just how vital this is. But having said that, that's true if in fact that's what really happens. We have people who just moved into our neighborhood maybe 2 months ago, okay, and they put up the wrong color shades, you know, like, oh my God, there goes the neighborhood. Well, the board goes over, or a couple of people from the board go over, and they didn't even have any idea there was an association, because, in fact, mm-hmm. neither the real estate agent yep. nor the seller had supplied them with a copy of the CC&Rs and the bylaws, okay? And so they never even signed off on them. But, again, because all that has to happen is that those restrictions be recorded with the county,
that's
it really
right.
didn't make any difference. Now, what the CAI would tell you is that, you know, this is a contract that's freely entered into. Well, my contention is how can any contract, you know, I don't care how you construe it, be freely entered into when one of the parties doesn't even know that it exists, regardless of what happened before? You know what I mean? Just on that fact, you know, how can that be construed as a freely entered into contract? It's just not right.
I agree with you. It's not freely entered into in most cases. It is in some cases. It's a bad deal. I don't think, there's this perception among people, because I've been doing this for a long time. I've talked to a lot of people, and, you know, you say, haven't you heard the stories, and did you see that in the news? And they, oh, yeah, we did, but they must have done something to deserve it. Or things like that just really don't happen.
People
have got to wake up, and they've got to realize that their rights are just going, whoof, right out the window.
Yeah.
But in your paper, Bob, you talk about having to pay an association attorney $46,000 in legal fees.
Well, yeah.
Over a $500 dispute. You want to tell us about that? Is that
sure.
something you can talk about?
The attorney that our association was using, I decided to look into her a little bit, so I Googled her. And it turns out that she was involved in a case with the Mountain View Condominium, which is close by here. It's in Valley Forge. Of course, I'm in Chad's Ford, and this is in Valley Forge. And it had to do with with a homeowner that had a dispute with the association. Well, the attorney, of course, she's allowed to, you know, collect her attorney fees by law, reasonable, you know, that word reasonable. And the homeowner, the original decision the homeowner did not like, and he appealed it, and then she sued him for the attorney fees, of course. And it went all the way up to the appellate court in Pennsylvania, and by a split decision, it was a 2-1 decision, it was not unanimous, she did win the appeal, and she was awarded $46,500 in attorney fees over this $500 dispute. The dissenting judge, for his part in the decision, described the award as unconscionable. Now, you know, when a judge uses the word unconscionable, that has a lot of weight. I mean, you know, they're not prone to overstatement. And, you know, for an appellate judge to use the word unconscionable, you know, he obviously had extreme feelings about this. You know, so when I brought that up at the board meeting, that, you know, we were going to do something with the docs, and they wanted to hire an attorney, and of course they talked about using this attorney. You know, I said, you know, you may not want to do this. You know, I brought all this up, okay? Well, the interesting thing was that the other board members, the attitude was, well, you know, that would never happen here. That would never happen to us. You know, you hear a lot of that with a lot of this stuff, is that, like, when you talk about foreclosures or all these drastic, terrible things, it's always, it'll never happen here, it'll never happen to us.
But the fact is that it happens
to a lot of people all over the country, you know, on an ongoing basis.
Well, that's exactly the attitude that I was talking about earlier. When you talk to people and you say, you know, this is what could happen if you move into an association, their comeback is oh, no, that sort of thing just really doesn't happen.
Well, I can assure you that it does happen. And all you have to do is when you peruse the Internet and you start to look for these things, what you find is that it's not just one or two sources. You know, it's all different sources, newspapers, websites, blogs. It's this very, very broad-based sourcing of this information that one can only draw the conclusion that this is not the isolated incident. You know, this is not the renegade single association that's going off its rocker. You know, this is a widespread problem. When the AARP, of all things, okay, comes out with a Bill of Rights for homeowners, I mean, just even the title is indicates just how serious this is. I mean, any reasonable person, you know, has to give pause and think, like what's going on here for an organization like that to author a document like that. It's really, really a big problem.
We're talking to Bob Metcalf. Bob's written a position paper on homeowner associations. You can read it. It's uploaded on my website, and that is www.onthecommons.us. Please go there and check it out. It's in the news and views, viewpoints, I think, in the new one. In the new website. And Bob is actually one of these horrible, terrible board members, you know, the ones that all the homeowners are very upset over. But, you know, Bob, again, this is one of the misconceptions that we've been talking about earlier. You know, not all board members are inherently bad just because they're there. Here's someone who actually got on the board, started looking at what goes on, and decided, hey, we need to look into this a little closer and see what we've got here. And so he wrote a paper on it. And thank you for doing that, Bob. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Bob. There's going to be plenty more where
people want to live.
So don't go away.
Covenants without associations telling them how.
Shoe?
Yeah, hold on.
Thank you. Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with us today, we have Bob Metcalf. Bob, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry, folks, we've been having some technical problems here, and I think I hit a couple of wrong buttons. So that means we're not that perfect right here at WBR today, but we've got a perfect guest, and he's doing a tremendous job. Thank you so much, Bob.
You're welcome.
Bob, we have one line, and I know that people have been calling in because there's a flasher that goes off in the studio. You don't hear the phone ring, but we've had people calling in. Folks, I'm sorry, I have one line. I cannot take your calls. My guest is on the phone. Call me later. Call me after the show or send me an email to onthecommons@cox.net, and I will be happy to talk to you or put you in touch with Bob or whatever it is you're calling for. Bob, we get, and because we don't have an extra line, people read the promo and they have a lot they want to say. So what happens is they send us emails. And what I want to do is I want to talk to you about some of the emails that we got and some of the comments that we got.
Sure.
One of them is, how did Mr. Metcalf avoid the brain transplantation that took place at my condo among the board members to, quote-unquote, lord it over his fellow neighbors? Board members that refuse to understand what is written in plain English in the Declaration and think they can wave a magic wand and change the Declaration by writing something different in their rules and regulations. How did you avoid, I guess, what Lord Acton called the power that corrupts?
Well, if I had a hard time hearing that, but if I heard the question correctly, the person is concerned about changing the documents and the process. Is that right?
The person wants to know how you avoided the brain transplantation that took place in her condo, where board members don't care what's written. They just decide that, you know, with the stroke of a pen, they can write a rule and regulation that overturns the declaration.
Well, yeah. One of the issues that I have with, and it's going on currently in my own community here, is the rules and regulations. You know, strictly by the book, the declaration, other than the state law, is the highest authority. The problem comes in that because the board is allowed, because it operates under the business judgment rule, is allowed to create rules and regulations and modify them and get rid of them if they want to at their will, it becomes a real issue. And one of the things that I've tried to do here is I'm trying to actually get a modification to the bylaws that would prevent the board from being able to alter the rules and regulations. Instead, any change to the rules and regulations would have to require a majority vote of the property owners. That way, first off, it would accomplish two things. It would eliminate the board's ability to capriciously create rules in an ad hoc fashion to suit their fancy at any given moment. And the second thing is that it would, at least in my view, would provide a much more stable environment for the people that live in these communities. I mean, for instance, we had an instance here. This happened this past winter, where a person had a problem with their property, and they had to move their car out of the garage because they had to go up through the ceiling. And they put the car on the street, and it was an antique car. It had some value to it, and the owner put a car cover over it. Well, this was last November, Thanksgiving time. Well, one of the residents called up the president of the board and complained that it was spoiling the Christmas look of the neighborhood. Well, that notwithstanding, his initial reaction, this is the president's initial reaction, was, I hope we don't have to create a rule for one person. Well, my reaction to that was simply, why do we have to create a rule at all? I mean, why can't the answer be that you are, in fact, allowed to park a car on the street with a car cover? You know, that's you're allowed to do that. So I think if the rulemaking process was put back on the property owners, not only would it slow it down, but it would also, make the board less capricious in how it tries to apply this.
Who owns the streets in your subdivision?
Excuse me?
Who owns the streets in your subdivision? Are they owned by the association, or are they owned by the county or the local government?
Yeah, no, the streets are owned by the association.
So they can control that, huh?
Oh, yeah, they can. They can. You know, but it's just the idea that you have, my board has five members, there's like three people. So the three people can just simply make up a rule because a single resident asked them to. I mean, you know, that to my way of thinking is just simply not right. You know, it's not. Aside from the fact that you're changing the terms of the contract at will, you know, which is also, you know, in my view, an egregious thing. It's simply not right to have that small number of people be able to just decide something like this without having the rest of the residents involved in that.
Well, it gets even worse, because usually what it says is that a majority of a board, so a five-member board, a majority is three, and then a majority of a quorum would basically be two people.
That's right.
And I don't know how many people you have, how many units you have, but two people can basically wreak havoc.
That's exactly correct, yes.
So make sure two of the other board members are out, and then you can control the board.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, I just, You know, I am having a hard time hearing you, but I'm trying.
You're still, I'm sorry. I can turn this up a little bit, but you see, we end up with this echo.
Yeah, well, that you can turn that down a little bit, because now I'm getting distortion in there. This is a little tough. But
that's what I mean. I mean, I'm playing with it just a hair.
Yeah.
It's we are having problems. I do apologize. I know that we have some new equipment on the board because the phone was not working before, and it is supposed to be working now. It just needs an adjustment, but we'll have it adjusted. You talk about a homeowner bill of rights.
Yes.
In your paper. And
well,
you talk about the AARP homeowner bill of rights. And you go through there a whole lot of bullets on what you, you know, your ideas of what need to be done.
Yes.
And some of your ideas I really like.
Well.
That is if you're going to fix the association and keep it with all its powers. Why not strip the association of all its powers except the obligation to maintain any common area where you have an association?
Well, I think the one thing is that a lot of people might not be aware of, although I'm sure your listeners are, a lot of the power that an association has is derived from state law. And, you know, that presents a real problem because no matter how much you try to, you know, and protest and whatnot, at the end of the day, the law is the law. And like I said, you know, anybody who lives in an association who's been told it's a democracy, it's as much a democracy as General Motors is. I mean, that statement is exactly true.
You're right.
It is a corporation, plain and simple. So I think the idea that the homeowners having rights is good. I think that your position of stripping the homeowners association of powers is even better. That's why in the end of my paper, I suggest the abolishing of the entire thing. Because, I mean, ultimately, you know, it, in my view, it's a fundamentally flawed thing, and it can never be made to work, really. You know. But, yeah, I think that the notion of making the board of directors more of a managerial agent that reflects the will of the people that live in the association as opposed to this autonomous governing agent, which it is now, has a lot of, would be beneficial to anybody who lives in one of these things.
Bob, one of the other emails that we got was somebody who wrote in and said, at the end of Mr. Metcalf's paper, he wrote, "Don't you think it's time we rid the country of these patently un-American institutions and replace them with a true democratic system, one designed to preserve the residents' rights as opposed to denying the same?"
That's right.
And he says, amen, put it to a vote. Renew. His position has been always that the association extinguishes itself, and you put it to a vote. And a simple majority has got to want to keep the association alive in order to keep it alive. But if you don't get a 51% vote, bye-bye association.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that, but then again, it comes back to the issue of the deed restrictions. In fact, I was just reading on the internet the other day about a community, I believe it was out in Oregon, where the builder had come in and he had put up a subdivision, created an association, and was in the process of selling the houses. The builder goes belly up, okay, so the association becomes defunct. However, another builder comes in and picks up where the original builder left off and completes the houses under the impression that there's no association because the original association had died. After he gets done, one of the residents finds out that there are deed restrictions on the property. and the D restrictions provide for an association. He was able to get the courts, and I believe this is in Oregon, he was able to get the association revitalized and reborn, if you will, just on the basis of the deed restrictions. So, I mean, you know, these things, you know, from what I can tell, you know, and this goes back to, you know, English common law from the 1300s, 1400s, I mean, you know, these deed restrictions seem to be, you know, ironclad. I mean, it's truly going to take a concerted effort. You know, this idea of having, you know, covenants that run with the land in perpetuity, in my view, is probably, you know, the most egregious factor of all. Because essentially, as soon as somebody comes in and creates one of these things, you know, in essence, it will be there forever. And I just don't think that that's wise, number one, because, you know, who knows what's going to happen 100 years from now. But it also is a case of somebody buying something where they simply do not have the ability to control what they pay the money for. It's just not right.
Oh, I agree with you. Also, you know, most of the, or all of the declarations that I've seen, I don't have a problem with the restrictions. I don't like them, but I have less problem with them, especially since all of the declarations that I've seen give the power to enforce them to the individual homeowners. So if there is a benefit to be gained, I mean, clearly whether your neighbor's blinds are cream or off-white is not going to affect your property one iota. Whether they use shredded mulch or whatever other kind of mulch is not going to affect your property. If they decide to build a gas station on their house next door, that is a problem, and that will affect your property. So therefore, you have the right to enforce a covenant that says you will not have a gas station there. You have a right. But what's happening with the way we're using this is, if your neighbor has used, has planted sunflowers, which are not allowed, and don't laugh, this is an actual case.
Yeah.
Then your money is going to be used to sue your neighbor because your neighbor had the audacity to plant flowers that were not approved.
Yes.
And that's where I have a real problem with
it. Well, yeah. I mean, that's just the thing taken to a point of absurdity that only a homeowners association can really provide. Okay? I mean, the simple fact is...
I like
is
that. I really like that, Bob.
It's what?
I really like that. The absurdity that only a homeowners association can provide. You're absolutely right.
Well, it's true. I mean, the fact is that, you know, people like to say, well, you know, you were talking about, you know, say, basic zoning requirements. I mean, the first thing is that whatever zoning occurs in a township or a county, okay, first off, and this is of fundamental importance, that is the result of a public government, okay? So, number one, you're talking about something that is not a private entity. To me, that makes a lot of difference, okay? The second thing is that, yeah, you know, if a neighborhood is zoned residential, yeah, you can't build a gas station, you know, you can't build a factory. You know, most people would agree that that's a pretty reasonable point of view. You know, when it comes down to the kind of flowers that you can plant, okay, the result of that kind of micromanagement and myopia is that you breed this incredibly virulent form of busybody. I mean, there are people that live their lives to go around and find violations from their neighbors, you know, and that really gets to the main thrust of the paper, is it's just no way to live. I mean, you know, because at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about here, you know, it's just no way to live.
And you couldn't have put it more succinctly and get right down to the heart of the matter. This
yeah.
is no way to live.
Yeah.
You're leaving the American zone, folks. I was deposed a couple of weeks ago, or maybe a month ago now, time flies, and the attorney doing the deposition was went through, apparently did a little research on the internet and found something that I'd written, and he said, do you really mean that? And what do you mean by it?
Yeah.
Well, guess what?
Yeah.
What do we mean by it? I don't know. Gee whiz.
Well.
Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. You've got an appendix at the back, and you sort of come up with just, and I kind of like this, you've taken some of the stuff out of CAI's website.
Right.
And come up with your own, you know, with your own comments on it. The Fair Debt Collections Practices Act is one of the areas that homeowners seem to win. I only know of one or two cases where the homeowners have lost. Time and again, you go to federal court, and time and again, it is a law that is being upheld. This is something that CAI just cannot handle at all. And they want, but the thing, you know, they want to do away with it. They want associations exempt from the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act. Now, the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act says you cannot lie. You cannot collect money that you are not owed. You cannot harass people. I mean, I'm just going, you know, from memory here. I had CAI members on the show, and I asked them in the past, exactly what is it in the Fair Debt Collections Practices Act that is preventing you from doing your job?
Yeah.
What provision is getting in your way of collecting the money? What is it you don't want? Oh, well, is it that you want to lie? Is it that you want to collect more than you're allowed to collect? Well, no, you see, that's not it.
Well, I think the thing with the Fair Debt Collection Act is that, you know, one of the things that the CAI and the associations and all the various attendant groups and institutes and think tanks attest to is that, you know, a homeowners association is first and foremost a business, so it should be run like one. Well, I find it interesting when it comes down to the money, okay?
Yeah.
That's the point at which they don't want to function like one.
Yeah, right.
They want to have this lien by default, which I must tell you, when I talk to people in my own neighborhood about this situation, and I mention the word lien, okay, I mean, that everybody understands that. And the fact that they have these empty liens, these bills of attainder by state statute, so they want to behave like a business in every way except when it comes to the debts that are owed to them. Then they want to be this special case where they can just, you know, foreclose on somebody's property. The most egregious example of that, of course, being non-judicial foreclosure, which is so rampant with corruption and outright crime. It's astonishing to me that even exists. But, you know, so I think that the, you know, the fact that now they want to be able to actually butt in the front of the line is the phrase I think I use, in front of the actual mortgage lenders. And you got to remember, you know, the mortgage companies, you know, for better or worse, you know, they are the ones that take the risk. You know, they are the ones that take the money out of their pocket to allow somebody to buy a house. And for the CAI to want to butt in front to get 6 months, I believe it's 6 months, worth of assessments, you know, up front before the mortgage company would be paid off, is just an incredible example of the avarice and greed that exists within the entire umbrella of service providers that claim to be, you know, helping the HOAs to this blissful existence. You know, it's all just BS.
Well, here's what they'll tell you. They'll say, it's so terrible. We cannot have the rest of the homeowners picking up the tab for these delinquent people. But what they don't tell you is that when they've got the payment plan, in order of hierarchical order, the first person to get paid is not the association. The association is at the bottom of the barrel. The first person who gets paid is the association attorney. The second
<That's right. laughs>
person to get paid is, you know, any costs and things incurred. And by the time it trickles down to what's left of the money that's collected, then if there's anything left, the association gets it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not doing this because they think the association has to have the money. They're not doing this to protect you, Bob, from your neighbor who may or may not be trying to sponge off you. They're doing this to enrich themselves.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, there's three distinct strata of people involved in this, okay? There's the hapless homeowner, which is basically the raw material that the CAI and the umbrella of industries uses for feed, if you will. Then there's the board member. Unfortunately, mostly, they are a group of people that are manipulated beyond belief by, you know, giving them all this illusion of being able to be ostentatious and powerful and all this kind of thing. But the truth is, at the end of the day, corporations, HOAs are creatures of the law. The laws are written by the attorneys. So the real money, you know, the real money is in the attorneys, you know. And all you got to do is look at the example that I say at the beginning of my and that happens all the time. I mean, you know, somebody will have like a, you know, $100 fine or something to the dispute, and the attorneys, you know, the attorneys take over, and all of a sudden it's $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, and they do it without apology. They are absolutely rapacious in the way they treat the homeowners.
Oh no, I agree with you. I mean, this is all well in California. The attorneys there wrote on the 25th anniversary, 30th anniversary, or whatever of the California CAI, said that these attorneys got together and they quote unquote wrote themselves a recession proof career.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well,
because initially
did you see the thing that came out, the ad for the CAI trade show in Illinois this past winter hit the jackpot with community living? I mean, truly, anybody of your listeners who would think that the management companies or the attorneys or any of the service providers have your interest at heart, think again. What it is everybody hops on the HOA gravy train, and, you know, it never stops. If by law, it never stops. If somebody has to move, like I say in the paper, or somebody leaves, doesn't matter. Somebody always owns the property, and somebody will always be forking over the money.
In Virginia, the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Chapter of CAI, it's don't be a lone wolf.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
In Virginia, the slogan they use is don't be a lone wolf.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think on that note, we're going to call it a day. Thank you so much for joining us, Bob. I really appreciate it.
Well, I enjoyed you having me. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to a layperson's perspective on this.
Listen, it's the layperson that's the most important person, because it's the layperson who has to make this thing work. And
well,
it's the layperson who gets it when the rest of the special interests get abusive. I mean, it's nobody's listening to the layperson. It's about time we did listen to the layperson.
Well, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
I'm a fellow layperson. Just
well,
because I get
exactly,
on.
But, you know,
well, I mean, you know, that's I you know, this isn't my career. This, I just do this for fun.
Yeah. Well, You've obviously, but like I said, I'm a neophyte at this. This is brand new, you know.
We all were at one point.
Yeah.
Just stick with us. Don't go away.
Okay.
Thanks again for joining us. Check out my website, onthecommons.us. On the Commons was produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.